This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies in for Terry Gross. Our next guest is actor Woody Harrelson. He first became known for his role in the long-running TV series Cheers. After Cheers, Harrelson concentrated on films, including Natural Born Killers, The People vs. Larry Flint, and No Country for Old Men. Last year, Harrelson earned an Oscar nomination for his role in The Messenger. It's out on DVD next week. In The Messenger, Harrelson and Ben Foster co-star as Army Casualty Notification Officers, those assigned to visit family members and tell them their loved one has died in combat. I spoke to Harrelson last year when The Messenger was released. In this clip from the film, Harrelson is Captain Tony Stone, a veteran of casualty notification. He's instructing Foster's character, Staff Sergeant Will Montgomery, who's new to the assignment, explaining what is and isn't done when delivering the tragic news of a combat death.
You do not speak with anybody other than the next of kin. No friend, no neighbor, no co-worker or mistress. Hours of operation are 0600 to 2200 hours. We don't want to wake anybody up in the middle of the night. Though if you ask me, hitting them with the news at the crack of dawn is not exactly a great way to start their day, breakfast-wise.
What do we do if the next of kin isn't around?
We leave. We don't wait. We don't lurk. We come back later. This is a zero-defect mission, a pure hit-and-get operation.
Is that it, sir?
One more thing. You do not touch the NOK. Avoid physical contact with the next of kin, unless it's a medical emergency, like if they are having a heart attack or something. You are representing the Secretary of the Army, not Will Montgomery, so in case you feel like offering a hug or something, don't. It'll only get you in trouble.
Woody Harrelson, welcome to Fresh Air. You know, I don't remember you playing a soldier a lot in the past. Could talk a little about getting into the character of Captain Tony Stone? I mean, the physical transformation, the way you carry yourself as an Army captain?
A lot of it has to do with Orrin Moverman, the director. He really helped me because, for one thing, he was in the Israeli military for a while, and he has a familiarity with the military. And honestly, as I told Orrin, there's really two particular occupations I thought I could never play, one being a soldier and the other being a policeman, just because I just don't feel like... I don't know what it is. Maybe it's something to do with authority or something. But so this one I was really nervous about, and I only had a few days prep. Part of what helped me was Orrin sent, you know, some backstory to the character, because, you know, otherwise I didn't feel like I had enough time to just use my imagination and try to figure it out. So luckily he sent me some pages of backstory to help me think in terms of Tony Stone. He sent me with my Class A's and my fatigue, so I'm marching around Bucharest in my boots and, you know, probably an odd sight. But
and you shaved your head for this role, right?
And, yeah, he asked me to shave my head, so, yeah, I did that. And, I mean, just the most, in reading a book, Tim O'Brien's The Things They Carry really helped. And, you know, there were a lot of things, but nothing really helped as much as just spending time with the soldiers. I felt like that really helped me. It humanized them in such a way that I felt like, oh, you know, they're not that much different from me, you know. So,
And this character of yours is also carrying some personal baggage. He's a reformed alcoholic, kind of hiding from the pain in his life, and maybe that which he is bringing to these loved ones.
Yeah, I think that's true. He's got a lot of pain and rage inside of him, and you know, kind of keeps it all under wraps when he goes and does his notifications. But during the course of the film, we get to know him a little better through Ben Foster's character, Will Montgomery, and who's also kind of a stoic guy who it takes a lot to get underneath his emotions. And that's one of the beauties of the way this movie was made, because you really come to know both of these characters in a slow but very effective way. And they really come to love each other. It's an unlikely friendship that develops.
Right, and there's sort of a hard-bitten exterior that they both put on, and then they have to go into some of the most emotionally wrenching circumstances any of us will ever have to in notifying these loved ones of the death of a serviceman. And, you know, as I thought about this, it occurred to me that all of us know what it's like to have a phone call that we dread, you know, to break up with a boyfriend or girlfriend or deliver uncomfortable news to somebody we know. These people who do this job have to walk up and deliver this life-shattering news to a total stranger. And I'm wondering, as you played that, where you get out of the car with Ben Foster and you're walking up to these people, are you thinking about how you steel yourself for that kind of an experience?
Yeah, everything in on the set was kind of perfectly laid out to make it the best or the realest possible experience. You know, it was shot with one camera, one take. We didn't meet the people ahead of time who we were doing the scene with. We didn't arrange it or block it or rehearse it. So we did all have the dialogue, but inside of that, there was still a lot of unpredictable things. And emotionally, it was very charged. And even if sometimes I didn't feel connected emotionally, Ben Foster would show me, pictures of some of the young men and women who had served and been killed in action. And it would just immediately, the emotion of it would come flooding back. And the actors we were with were phenomenal. So they really made it an emotional experience.
So these, if I understand this correctly, there was no rehearsal. You were going up to people you had literally never seen before, as if you were carrying this news, and then you encountered their reactions.
Yeah, I mean, there were six notifications. Two of them were, you know, Samantha Morton and Steve Buscemi, so we had seen them before, but we didn't see them before doing this, and we didn't... I'd never met Samantha Morton, so I think that it was a good way to do it, but it was intense.
Actor Woody Harrelson, his film The Messenger is out on DVD next week. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Our guest is actor Woody Harrelson. He earned an Oscar nomination for his film The Messenger. It's out on DVD next week. Here's his first appearance on the TV series Cheers.
Woody, did you say you're looking for work?
Well, actually, I came to Boston on a fact-finding tour. See, I tend bar back home in Indiana. Well, it's not a bar exactly. It's more like a pigsty with a jukebox. If we had a jukebox.
Carla, I'd like you to meet Woody Boyd. Woody, this is Carla Tortelli.
Hi, ma'am.
Ma'am? What's that supposed to mean?
I believe it's a term of respect.
I wonder it sounded so weird.
The character that you played, Woody Boyd, was sort of this lovable, naive hayseed from Indiana. And, you know, it occurred to me that you got this huge role at a pretty early time in your acting career. Not like you didn't pay some dues. I know that you did, plays in New York, but you had a lot more success in your 20s than a lot of people did. And I'm wondering if being in Hollywood then, you grew up in Ohio, I guess, and playing
Texas and Ohio.
Texas and Ohio, right. And that being in Hollywood then and having that role, were you a little wide-eyed like Woody Boyd?
Yeah, I suppose I was. I was, I just turned 24 when they started. I was 23 when I auditioned for it, but it was right just before my birthday. And then, I don't know, doing it, I got to say, I didn't have the full realization of, well, I'm replacing this beloved character. I mean, I kind of knew that, but I hadn't watched the show, so I didn't really know that much. I think it would have been a lot more of a daunting task had I been watching the show. But certainly, I remember standing back off stage waiting for that red light to go on, and, I could hear the dialogue, and I could tell it was getting closer, and then, boom, the red light goes on, and I'm entering into the bar in front of a live audience, and obviously a show that's going to be seen by a lot of people, so it was pretty, I was nervous, I got to say. But thankfully, you know, I'd done enough theater in college that I think it really helped me get through that.
After Cheers, you made a transition to movies in a way that not that many TV actors do as successfully. And one of your early films was White Men Can't Jump, and I thought we'd listen to that. I think it really put you on the map as a movie actor, and I thought we would listen to a clip from that. And this is you and your co-star Wesley Snipes. I mean, those who know the film know that you guys are basketball hustlers. You go onto playground and provoke games and fool people and take their money. And in this scene, you're about to compete with Wesley as a partner in a two-on-two basketball tournament, and you suddenly start talking trash to a couple of guys on the court whom you might have to play later. Let's listen.
Hey, chump. Yeah, you, potato head. You know who I'm talking about. Is that the best game you got? Because if it is, you better just grab that free T-shirt and head home.
Yeah, man, what the hell are you doing, man?
You hit, who'd you bring over here? Mighty Mouse? You know something? You're too pretty to play basketball. You know that? You got that big Z in your fro, man.
Come on, would you stop already?
Hey, man, what are you, the Black Zorro?
Oh, man, look, that's enough.
Hey, no, seriously. You get your hair cut at the Braille Institute?
What the f*** is Opie Taylor talking about anyway, huh?
Opie Taylor? Opie, hey, I got your Opie, you big, bad, gomer pot, droopy-eyed son of a bitch.
You and the cream and wheat man, take your ass back to Mayberry and tell Aunt B she better have my bean pies or I'ma kick her ass. What are you doing?
Lurching more tissue?
What are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing two things.
What? What are you doing?
I'm making them mad. Most guys don't play good when they're mad.
Look, you know you're embarrassing me. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing I'm doing.
You know, you're not embarrassing me. You are pissing me off. That's what you're doing.
Well, good, because unlike those guys, I assume you play better when you're mad. Am I right?
I'm not listening to you.
Yeah, but you are hearing me.
And that is my guest, Woody Harrelson, with Wesley Snipes from the movie White Men Can't Jump. A lot of fun macho trash talk there. But you know, a character really different from Woody Boyd on Cheers. And, you know, I have to say, when I think of a Woody Harrelson role, what I think of is a guy who brings enormous self-confidence, just not a moment of self-doubt. I mean, the kind of guy that could start trash-talking on the basketball court. Is that closer to you than this naive kid from Cheers?
You know, maybe somewhere right in the middle. I don't feel as confident as that. I don't remember. Well, I guess I do some trash-talking, but, you know, I guess I feel a lot like that character, Billy Hoyle. Yeah, I guess so.
Well, let's talk a little bit about The People versus Larry Flint. This was a role that got you an Oscar nomination. I mean, Larry Flint was, of course, the publisher of Hustler magazine, who was shot and paralyzed from the waist down. I believe the assailant was never actually caught. And you played him in this film about his battles against censorship, as well as, it's, you know, a profile of his very interesting life. I thought we should listen to a cut here. In a way, you kind of had two, there were sort of two roles here. I mean, you had to play the Larry Flint before he was injured and the one after. And the one after, the gunshot wounds affected his speech. And in this cut from the film, you've just come back to Hustler magazine after being either in jail for contempt in one of the court cases or in the hospital, I'm not sure which, but you've come back to the magazine and sort of taken charge. Let's listen.
The pervert is back. The pervert is back.
Circulation is down by a third. Color reproduction is horrible. Models look like they're $3 whores. The writing is by some moronic idiots.
Mr. Flint? I don't want to step on your toes, but things have changed since you were actively running the company. I mean, I look back at the stuff you did in the 70s, and it was sort of racy and crazy, but the country's different now. Reagan has rebuilt America, and the moral majority is gaining power.
You're fired.
Excuse me?
You get the f*** out of my building, Doug! Get him out of here! Need to blow dry, jerk.
Bye-bye.
Take him out of here, throw him in the incinerator, cut him to little pieces, and feed him to the animals out there. Get out of here!
There! Larry!
Larry, you can't do that. I mean, he's our vice president. He's the VP of marketing.
Hey, Jimbo, are you trying to challenge my authority? You see that on the wall? LFP. That's Larry Flint Publications. Not JFP. Okay, I'm the big kahuna here. Do you have a problem with that?
No, Larry. You're the boss.
So, Larry, what's the plan?
Plan. Plan is simple. The establishment took my manhood from me, but they left half of me. They left the half with the brain, and I'm going to use it to get back.
And that's my guest, Woody Harrelson, making his mark as Larry Flint, the porn publisher, in the film The People versus Larry Flint. Tell us, what interested you about doing this film?
Well, you know, when they offered it to me, I was I kind of had a similar opinion most people had, which when they heard it, they said, well, why would you want to do a movie about this guy? And yet, you know, they were, and Milos Forman was going to direct it, so it really seemed like something you got to pay attention to. So I went and met with Larry, and my feeling was if I didn't like him, I just wasn't going to play the part. But I was kind of amazed by him, you know. He's a brilliantly funny, interesting guy who likes to stir things up, and yet, you know, whether or not you agree with what he does, he's a kind of a fascinating character. So I was glad to get time with him. And then when we started to make it, there was a lot of work to be done because the script just needed a lot of work. And there ended up being a lot of improv in it. And that was fun listening to that scene because that was my brother in that scene. He played Jimmy Flint.
Do you identify with Larry Flint in any way? I mean, you're both people who sort of aren't afraid of stirring things up and setting your own course.
Well, I think probably during the course of it, he kind of activated me more. Just for having played him, it made me, you know, it was after that that I did things where I had brushes with the law and so forth that, you know, probably I never would have done that.
Maybe you should explain what you mean by brushes with the law.
Well, for example, I was upset by the fact that there was no distinction made between hemp and marijuana, where I think in a free country you should be free to grow whatever, but I'm not going to pretend this is a free country. But however, I went to Kentucky, and along with my buddy Joe Hickey there, we kind of set up this thing where I planted hemp seeds and got arrested. And then the concept of it was to go to trial, which we ultimately did, and hopefully the jury would see the distinction between the two, and our, you know, farmers would be free to grow hemp, which you can use for paper or clothing, or, you know, it's a sustainable material. So that's what ended up happening. And doing things like that or climbing the Golden Gate Bridge, I don't know if I ever would have done that kind of thing had I not played Larry, just because it made me look at things differently. Before, the thought of getting arrested was just an impossible thought, and I would never intentionally do that. And after playing the part, I looked at it as a way to kind of get my point across, you know.
I read, too, that there was a time when you were having a rough time with Laura Louie, your wife, although then I guess you weren't married. And you spoke to Larry about it, and I think he even might have spoken to her.
Yeah, Larry took it upon himself, unbeknownst to me, and called up Laura and got together with her and actually was giving relationship advice, because I guess he considered her, you know, being my wife comparable to what it would be like to be Larry's wife. I'm not sure why. But it was one of those incredible, you know, things a true friend does, you know, that you just, I was really grateful for that. And I think it did help.
We're about out of time, but Woody Harrelson, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure being on your show.
Woody Harrelson recorded last year when his film The Messenger was released. It's out on DVD next week.